guys. 908. I'm Dale Desmond. All right, it's the first day of the new show, and we have a couple of guests for you this first hour. Come on in, Andy. We're gonna get things started with my other brother, Andy. In studio, Andy Thompson is going to start things off. We're going to chat with David Cordero later in this hour. We're going to talk about some of the things happening here in St. George City. Big weekend, Andy, especially with our local colleges. How much football did you watch this week? If you were to take a wild guess, how much do you think you watched?
Hold on.
We got to figure out why I can't hear you here. Oh, I got you in the room. There we go.
Boom.
That's it. That's much better.
First of all, let's not bury the lead. It's a big day in Southern Utah because it's Brother Dale's first full show on the air on KDXU.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive if you live in Southern Utah.
So I've gone by Brother Dale on the air for 20 years.
Yeah.
Almost 20 years. 2006.
Yeah.
When I started it. And we're letting it go.
No.
At least on this show.
Okay.
At least on this show. If you guys missed it last week when Andy Griffin was still here, I was doing some kind of cross training with him, handing off. We talked about how this name that just happened on the air one day in Idaho Falls on 105.5 The Hog.
Yeah.
A guy called up, my co-host said, "Hey, Big Mike, what's your brother's name?" And he's like, "Hey, my buddy's name is Dale." He's like, "Oh, your brother Dale, huh?" And it just stuck.
Perfect for the Hawk or the country, which you've been on for years, right?
Yes, yes. And so we're kind of letting, at least in this show, Brother Dale go. And I'm telling you, it's tough.
Oh.
It's tough. I've every time I've opened the mic for 20 years, I say, "Hey, what's up, guys? It's Brother Dale. Here's Kenny Chesney." And now I'm getting into big boy radio.
Yes.
Here on
KDXU. And now what? You're just Dale?
Dale Desmond,
okay,
yes.
Mr. Dale Desmond, very official, Esquire.
If you think it's hard for you not to say it, it's 1,000 times worse, AT, to not do that. But
to answer your question,
yeah.
I would say if I had to put an hour thing on it, I'm a red zone guy on Sunday, so that's like
seven hours plus the
prime Sunday night football in the evening. Saturday, you know, if you count game day, which starts at 7 a.m. or whatever it is, you know, that's an all-day affair. I did throw a bone to my wife, and we went to one of these murder mystery dinners.
Okay.
But I got that out of the way on Friday night. So I did my penance early, which
penance,
you got to do.
I like it.
And then you can watch football for the rest of the weekend.
I'm single.
Yeah.
I've been single for a couple of years, I've got a girlfriend out of town, but
she's in Canada, right?
Trust me, lots of folks have said the same thing to me. Uh-huh, sure. When are we going to meet this girlfriend? Exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting because when you're a married guy and you marry somebody that's not a big sports fan, you know, it's a difficult thing to start at 11 o'clock and go until, 9-ish on a Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, it's difficult. My wife has become accustomed to it. I play that it's part of the job
card.
Of
course. You got to play that.
You got to play that almost every weekend. So
Hannah, if you had not watched as much football, you wouldn't be able to help out in this segment here and getting everybody ready for the Utah
Bowls. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And can we get into BYU and the disrespect and how I'm glad Notre Dame didn't get in because that would have been even more disrespectful. But then for Notre Dame to say, because we're not in the playoff,
right?
Deuces on the Pop-Tarts Bowl or whatever. We're not going to demean ourselves by going and losing to BYU. We're just going to sit this one out and prepare for next year. Notre Dame, they can, I don't know what
they can touchdown Jesus their way back to the North Bend. Here's my thought on this. Do you think like it is a slight to BYU? It seems like it that they're in the Pop-Tarts Bowl in Orlando, Florida on the 27th? on the 27th, yes. Orlando, Florida. The Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Yeah, it's super insulting. I like the Pop-Tarts Bowl because they play into how hokey and weird it is that there's a Pop-Tarts Bowl, and at the end of the game, they, like, bake a giant Pop-Tart, and the team eats it. So it's actually kind of cool what the Pop-Tarts Bowl does. So wow. BYU and the fans can go to Disney World in Orlando and enjoy the Pop-Tarts Bowl. But what BYU needs is for Texas Tech out of the Big 12 that nobody respects. The Big 12 got one team in. That's the same as the Sun Belt. I mean, James Madison was playing FCS football like 5 years ago or whatever, and now they're in the playoff, and the Sun Belt has just as many teams as the Big 12. So what BYU and every other fan of the Big 12, even if you're a Utah fan or whatever, who you're cheering for is for Texas Tech to go, and this is the $25, $30 million roster that Texas Tech has. Go win the whole dang thing.
Okay, I was
you don't
say,
want the SEC or the Big 10 to win it again this year.
Yeah, I was wondering if you felt the other way where you hope Texas Tech lays an egg and said, see, we should have been there.
Well,
or at least had another entry.
Absolutely. That's a good point. But what BYU could argue if Texas Tech goes and dominates and wins the championship is we might be the second best team in the whole country, and we weren't even invited to
given
the playoffs.
Given the chance, right.
So it's a big insult. It reminds me of the NFL, AFL. It took Joe Namath in 69 to beat the NFL in the third Super Bowl for the NFL to be like, oh, the AFL, you guys are actually pretty good. We'll merge. We'll actually be one entity. Right now, college football is bifurcated into two or three tiers. It's going to take somebody from the Big 12. Nobody from the Big 12, as presently constituted, has won a national championship this century. It's going to take somebody to do that, and hopefully it's Texas Tech. And if it's not, maybe next year BYU can increase their NIL enough in this offseason to get there.
BYU joined the Big 12 with a lot of big-name teams. You know, Texas, and you know, these other guys were in it, and all of a sudden it's like when you come to a party and everybody sneaks out the back door.
Yes.
What happened to the party, man? My smell weird?
They sold us all out. They sold Texas and Oklahoma, sold the Big 12 out. Of course, USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, who you hate anyway because you're a Wazoo guy.
Big Wazoo guy.
They sold us out, and it's now just the Big 10 and SEC Invitational every year for the college football playoff, and that's why I'm hoping Texas Tech can crash it.
Yeah. Talk about Utah, where the Utes are at. They're going on, they're playing, let's go back. Before we go into the Utes, talk about the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech. They're playing Georgia Tech, right, in the Pop-Tarts Bowl?
Oh, is that who?
Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets is what I'm reading.
Yes.
Out of the SEC? Still in the SEC?
Georgia Tech is in the ACC.
That's right.
And I was cheering for them. I want them to beat Georgia every year to kind of take them down a peg because, you know, some rivalries are so imbalanced. That's kind of become one of them. Georgia Tech has a good history, but Georgia versus Georgia Tech just isn't even close.
It's a hammer and a nail.
We're lucky here with the Holy War that BYU and Utah is usually pretty competitive. But Georgia Tech is a good team. They were supposed to be a playoff team. I was just whining about the Big 12.
Yeah.
How they get no respect. The ACC has zero team. Oh, no, they got Miami. They have one team, but it was looking for a minute like they were going to have zero teams in, which would have been insane as a Power Four conference.
What does that outlook look like? I mean, BYU against, is it going to be a speed bag thing, do you think? I mean, does Georgia Tech hold the candle to BYU in their prowess?
I hope BYU smacks them for the reasons we were talking about before so people realize, oh, we missed out on getting BYU in the playoff. But Georgia Tech is a really good team. They were a top 15 team pretty much all year. Haynes King's their quarterback. He was supposed to be a Heisman guy, a really well-coached team. Brent Key, I think, is the name of their head coach. He was looking at other places to go to and a name, but being bandied about in the coaching carousel. But he stayed at Georgia Tech. They're good. It's going to be a big challenge for BYU.
All right. He's Andy Thompson coming over from our sister stations, our sports stations over here, ESPN Radio 97.7. AT, let's talk about Utah. The Utes taking a little trip down I-15 to take on the Huskers, the Cornhuskers, which I thought, my first thought was, They're bowl eligible?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a big victory for those guys. They haven't been relevant forever.
Yes. Nebraska's been bad. They've got the wannabe Mahomes kid who wears number 15. He's got the same haircut. He moves exactly like Patrick Mahomes.
He walks like he's got a load in his pants.
Yes, he does that. He does this thing where he's waving his fingers at his lineman after every play. It's an incredible facsimile that this kid does. So that's interesting. Matt Rhule's a really good coach. They had another disappointing year this year. But at least it's Nebraska and not Northwestern,
need plumbing help?
Which is what they've had last time they went to this bowl.
So they're playing the Huskers, and so is it Utah going to? Is it going to be quick and easy for them? What do we think?
Yeah, I think Utah is going to have a big advantage in this game. You know what's funny about Kyle Whittingham was he was known for dominating bowl games. His bowl record was awesome from about 2005 to 2017, and I think he's been on this long stretch of losses where he's been playing in prestigious bowls like the Rose Bowl. I hope they get that. I don't think they've won a bowl game since 2017, which is crazy.
That is,
because Utah's used to winning a bunch of bowl games, but yeah. they'll have a chance in this matchup against Nebraska.
And a lot of folks will be making that little trip.
Yes.
And it'll be like a sea of red down I-15 here.
Yes. And big red, Nebraska's fan base is one of the best in the country for traveling. So, and it's, you know, Vegas. So it's going to be I think it's going to be a good atmosphere down there. Whereas a couple years ago when they played Northwestern, nobody cares. They're wearing sweater vests and talking about their theses and that type of stuff.
Well, and looking for good Chicago pizza
as
well from Northwestern. So that's the SRS Distribution Las Vegas Bowl.
Yikes.
I have no idea what that is. Do you think there's too many bowls? I think we ought to pare this down.
Yes. If it were up to me, we'd just throw out all these bowls. I think more and more teams who are disappointed that they're not in the playoff, like Notre Dame, this is insulting. We're going to have to go play in the playoff. I think more and more teams are going to bow out, and bowls are just going to continually be diminished.
I think there's something that we will see at some point where we'll see, these bowls will end up just kind of running out of money.
Yeah.
Because they cost so much to put on. And the eventually I think the networks will go, we'll put you on ESPN Plus, but
good
money
point.
Is there.
They will stream it or whatever, but fans don't come. You know, you look at a lot of these December bowls and it's not even half full. So I don't know how long this bowls, but college football fans should be like, that's fine with me. These bowls have never meant jack. Now that we have an expanded playoff, that's what we've always wanted. There will always be arguments about the teams who barely missed out, like BYU this year. But this is having 12 teams in a true playoff is so much better than going back 10 years ago in the BCS where the robot just decided the two, and then going back before that when writers just at the end of the season scratched their head and said, this team's the title. So this is the glory days of college football.
And coaches would give their assistants their ballot and say, I don't know, do something with it.
Exactly.
And then finally, the Utah State Aggies squeaking into bowl contention, going to play against my very beloved Washington State Cougars in the on the Smurf turf.
Yeah.
In Boise, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Now, the Cougs have been up and down. The Aggies have been up and down. But the cool thing about this is they lead. They're going to be the first of these three bowls that we can watch and have some local pride going here.
Yeah, and I think Utah State fans had a difficult time accepting Bronco Mendenhall this year from New Mexico by way of Virginia, by way of BYU, because Logan fans are like, this is a BYU guy. Side part, suspending kids if they drink whatever coffee. That's a joke, but the idea of accepting.
I'm glad you qualified that.
As the coach in Logan was, I think, hard for a lot of people to accept. Not a lot of personality, not great at press conferences. Ceiling might be 8 wins, 9 wins maybe at Utah State. But this was a program that was in disarray. You bring in Bronco, he brings the discipline, gets it stabilized, gets you to a bowl in year one. So I think Utah State fans have got to accept that this is their future and kind of be grateful for this stabilizing year where Bronco came in and fixed some stuff, got him to a bowl game. And I think that'll be a pretty good matchup. A team that they're going to go on to play in the new Pac-12 Conference of Champions in the future, right?
It's like if you're not a state team, if you don't have state State in your name, you're not allowed in.
Yes.
It's all these Fresno State, Washington State, Utah State, all these guys. So do you feel that Utah State trending up? Do you think you have full faith that Bronco's going to kind of bring this, turn it around?
Yeah, I think so. Everywhere he goes, he kind of fixes something, and then it gets stale after a few years, and he bails. So you at least got a couple more good years with Bronco where it'll keep ascending up. I feel bad for Utah State because, like a lot of schools who are group of five or below, you lose 80% of your roster, or at least all your good players every year. But they brought in guys, and we're seeing it in basketball every year, but Utah State as well. They have an ability, this resiliency, where you can lose everybody, but you can still be competitive. But football in particular, yeah, I think Utah State fans should be excited that Bronco will keep doing well for a few years to get you up to an 8-win team consistently in the Mountain West, soon to be Pac-12.
In your estimation, in Southern Utah, Washington County, let's just say, what would you say is the percentage of BYU fans to Utah fans to State fans? Is it in order? You don't have to say a number, I guess.
BYU number one by far.
By far.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Then you got Tony Chambers.
I was just going to say, TC.
And no, I see a lot of Utah stuff, but BYU beats everybody by far, in my opinion. And then Utah State comes in. You know, the few the proud Aggie fans, you see the Aggie A and a lot
every
of license
while,
plates
yeah.
and stuff like that. But, yeah, definitely in third place. But Utah State fans are a proud bunch, and they, you know, anytime you – I went to Utah State. Anytime you see an Aggie, there's an instant connection and bond because of how much love they have for the campus and Logan and the teams and stuff like that. So, but BYU – carries the day for sure.
All right. Andy Thompson coming over for a couple more minutes here. Real quick, let's run over the college football playoffs. So if anybody's driving to work today and you're like, I don't know what happened, I want to sound like I know what I'm talking about, AT, give them some thoughts on the, you know, the college football playoff, how it shook out. We've got about three, four, 5 minutes left before we bring David Cordero in from the city of St. George.
Yeah, Indiana gets the number one seed, which is the coolest thing ever. And what Kurt Cignetti has done at Indiana for football is the greatest thing anyone's ever done in college football, because they were at the basement of the Big Ten forever. They're the worst team in the Big Ten, arguably, forever. He comes in last year, gets them to the playoff. This year goes undefeated, wins the Big Ten with a decent NIL budget, but nothing compared to, I don't think, some of the other premier Michigans and Penn States and Ohio States of the world. He is so dang good. The kid's going to win the Heisman. Who's the goofiest, nerdiest kid to ever win the Heisman. If you missed his post-game interview, go watch it. He's a goofball, and maybe they take it away from him because of how he embarrassed himself.
The goofiest since Gardner Minshew, at least.
Yeah, right. So they beat Ohio State, which was awesome. So they're the number one seed, deservingly. Ohio State is the number two seed. They both get a bye. The three seed is Georgia, who beat Alabama in the SEC championship. Texas Tech, which I love, gets a bye from the disrespected Big 12. And then your first-round matchups, Oregon takes on James Madison in Autzen. They're huge favorites, 21 points against James Madison, the Dukes, I want to say. Oklahoma is the 8 seed. They'll play the number 9 seed, Alabama. So redundant. Get it easy. We've already seen this matchup. Get it out. I'm so sick of all these SEC teams getting in. You got Ole Miss, who Lane Kiffin abandoned before the playoff. What do you think about that, by the way, Brother Dale? This guy has a chance to go win a national title. The best team Ole Miss has ever had, and he bails on them before the playoff.
Well, because he could be where Ryan Day is at Ohio State now, where you're like, oh, it's all this expectation, and then you lose in the conference championship.
Yes.
And then you're, maybe LSU goes, you know,
yeah,
maybe we don't want to offer you a major contract. And have you ever? I mean, that's a long ways away. You ever been to Oxford, Mississippi?
No.
Yeah, it's the size of this studio.
Okay, so you're saying you understand Kiffin wanting to get the heck out of Dodge?
Yeah,
go to
I think so. I mean, there's a reason that coaches never stay or players never stay in Pullman with the Washington State Cougars. Same thing. It's about the size of this studio. It's a little.
But you got to tell me if Marv Levy got a job offer to leave the Bills back in 93
right,
and go and coach the Seahawks, and he did it before the playoffs, you would be cool with that.
Well, but that's, I mean, I think it's apples or oranges.
Yeah.
But
because it's NFL and college.
Oh, you're going to a playoff. You got a chance to win a championship. Yeah, you recruited all the kids there, and now you're leaving them in their moment of need and hope for a title at the worst possible time.
I appreciate you personalizing the message for me. I do. I really do. But, yeah, I mean, I think he sees Ole Miss as a JV
backwater
program.
Backwater JV
program. Yeah, kind of a JV program. Yeah. The second hottest sister. And he had a chance to, move up.
Yeah.
So, but either way, Notre Dame says, we're too cool for you guys.
Yeah.
We're out of here. So you're thinking BYU wins. Utah, do they beat the Cornhuskers?
I think BYU beats the Cornhuskers.
And Bronco and the Aggies.
Yes. Let's win all three of them.
You think you're going to
let's go.
Make this happen?
I think so.
All right,
favorable matchups.
He's Eddie Thompson. Thanks for spending a couple minutes with us, getting us up to speed on our Utah teams getting into the postseason. A couple minutes away, guys. We're going to have David Cordero in studio from City of St. George, going over a bunch of stuff. They just opened the new City Hall, new fire station. There's a ton of stuff going on, City of St. George. KDXU News Time 9:29. KDXU News Time is 9:33. I'm Dale Desmond in the big chair now for the big man AG. Let's try those. I think those headphones. Nope, those aren't even plugged. Are those even plugged in? Here we go. I think you can grab those. We got David Cordero from the. Is that going to work? Maybe. We'll see if it takes us off the air, right? We got David Cordero from the City of St. George, my good friend David Cordero. Now, it's funny, David, I don't know if you know this or not, but you were, I don't say close, but there was a point where there was a conversation about you sitting in this chair.
Is that
did
right?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
You never knew that.
Never knew that.
So back...
Grab a
chair. There we go. Back in the day when I was trying to get all these buttons pushed the correct way. When I was running the show here before, when I was the operations manager here with what used to be Cherry Creek, Mike McGarry was getting ready to retire.
Yep.
And we were looking at some options, and the current GM had come to me and said, hey, you know what you need to do is get a hold of David Cordero. That guy's connected. He's smart. He's he's
that's
engaging.
Debatable.
Right. Well, he's a Chargers fan. Our general manager said to get a hold of David Cordero. And I said, I think I met him once at a thing. I don't even know why I met you once. Uh-huh. And before I had the chance to get with you on that, we hired Andy Griffin.
Well, Andy did a great job. I go back with Andy almost 20 years.
Yeah.
What a great guy. And we used to live in the same neighborhood. His kids babysitted mine for a little bit.
Okay. So,
great guy. Wish him well in his retirement. But it's exciting to have you here.
It's a challenge. We talked about it off the air. It's not like, music radio where you can just play some tunes and talk in between. It's a fully engaged thing. You got to be on your toes, which is a details thing. For me, I'm more of an artist, less of a details guy, but I digress. Let's talk about stuff happening at the City of St. George.
Yeah.
We just opened a new fire station, and I was busy the day we opened it, that it opened. Now, we'll talk about the tradition of opening a fire station. There's some cool things that happen that I didn't know about.
Absolutely. So anytime you open a fire station, or if you're introducing a new rig to an existing station, there is what's referred to as a push-in ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes back to the early days of fire service in the 1800s, before cars. And so when you had to fight a fire, you had horses hauling the fire equipment, and they haul it out there, they fight the fire, then they come back, and at a certain point the rig or cart or whatever the stagecoach
wherever we are in the evolution,
it has to be put in just so underneath some shelter, and so they would push it in. And so as time has moved on and technology increased, they didn't want to lose kind of that tradition.
All right.
And it's also a great opportunity to get the whole community involved and be a part of it. We probably had 60 or 70 people helping push in the rig.
I love that. Now the whole thing's open. Talk about some of the cool features of this fire station. I mean, you know, as we talked about evolution, things get, you know, nicer and nicer. And as far as evolution making things safer and better as we go along.
Yeah, and so it's a huge upgrade from our previous Station 1. The previous Station 1 was over up on 1000 East, really close to Utah Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, if you've been around Utah Tech, it can get a little bit congested traffic-wise.
Yep.
And so it was a challenge kind of getting in and out at times there. And the room for training for the leadership was really small. I mean, they were on top of each other. The meeting room table was also the kitchen table was also, you know, I mean, it served so many different purposes, right?
Which is disheartening, I think, to the guys inside that, you know, they're like, gosh, we can't do this because that's already going on. We can't, you know, have dinner here because we've got presents or whatever is on the table.
Right. Yeah. And so they were on top of each other, and you know, our growth. I mean, that was, I think, in the late 80s that was built. And so it was time for a new station. And so we identified this great property on the corner of 400 East and 100 South. Now, it used to be the Flood Street Chapel for the LDS Church.
Right, yep.
And the building was in disrepair, and they were looking to sell, and we were looking to buy. And so a deal was struck. We purchased the property on the condition that we had to tear down the building.
Yep.
And so we did, and had a lot of commemorative bricks that were handed out to members of the community. We might even still have some left. I'd have to check with our fire chief. But anyway, we built on that ideal location. I mean, it's right in the center of town, catty corner to the Dixie Sun Bowl, which is getting a facelift of its own right now. And it has four bays in the fire station, so they can run multiple crews.
That's
out of
awesome,
it.
Yeah.
There is a little in the front. There's a little, and you can get a glimpse from the street if you're walking by, or you know, kind of stop at the traffic light there. A little bit of a museum paying homage to those who came before us. Because one thing I want to mention about the city that I think we do really well, we look to the future, right? We try to forecast our needs and what our residents are going to need 20, 30, you know.
Yeah, so we're not doing this again in 5 years.
Exactly. But we also don't want to forget our heritage, the past, those who laid the groundwork to get us to this point. That cannot be forgotten. And so in our fire station, we have basically a museum of our early firefighting days. We have a couple of our vintage rigs, including the one of the originals that we used to have. It was from the 1930s, I think 1936, I want to say. And so really, really worthwhile to check it out when you get a moment. And a lot of old photos there, old equipment you can look at, and just a really neat addition. I mean, anybody can build a fire station,
yeah,
right?
Right. I can. I mean, well, I mean, you. I don't know about you, but I could.
But you know, making it really personable and unique, and you know, of course, I'm
functional.
I'm giving human characteristics to a building, but like, you know, to make it very very fitting for the community it serves is really been great.
I love it. So it's open. Can folks come down and visit that anytime? Do they have to make an appointment? Kids, grandkids, you bring them down, they can take a look.
Yeah, you can. You can go in and you can check it out. Again, it's right the 400 East entrance. Sorry, the 400 East entrance. Go in and kind of make the immediate left, and you can you can check it out, and invite all our listeners to go check it out when they have a moment.
I love it. He's David Cordero, City of St. George Communications Manager. What's the
Complaint Director? No, Communications and Marketing Director.
Yeah. Okay, so let's spend a couple of minutes talking about the Wreaths Across America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to be very, very much involved here in St. George.
Right. Yeah. So the City of St. George is a sponsor of the Wreaths Across America event. It's this Saturday, the December 13th, 10 a.m. at the Tahnaquin Cemetery.
Okay.
Right off of Dixie Drive. And it's, the centerpiece is the Veterans Memorial that's right there. And, you'll have some guest speakers, but the culmination of it really is the laying of the wreaths on military veterans' gravestones. And anyone can lay a wreath.
Mm-hmm.
The wreaths are all there. They're going to be all spread out after the program happens, then you have an opportunity to go and lay the wreath. Now, there is special instruction. You're supposed to say something, and they'll give you instructions when you get there.
Cool.
But it's just to make it, very solemn, very fitting, just appreciative. And these are all of our military veterans, not only the ones who died in battle.
Yep.
These are the ones that, served and then
served in any capacity.
In any capacity. And then lived a great life and contributed to society and all that. And then now are at their final resting place. And so, not only is this happening, in St. George, there's all of our surrounding cities, their cemeteries are having a similar event at the same time at their cemetery. So, let's say you live in, you live in Hurricane or Washington, and you don't want to necessarily go all the way out to
Tahnequin.
To Tahnequin.
Yeah.
Go to the cemetery in your community. And it's a really soul-filling event,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I can see that. Our Rotary Club, our St. George Rotary Club does this on Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Mm-hmm. We do flags. We put flags out. We pick them. We leave them out there for the good part of a week. Yeah. What's the significance of happening now in December with wreaths across America? Why is that significant now? Is there a date that it marks? What's the significance there?
That's a great question. Valerie King, who runs the, she doesn't run it anymore. She used to run, but now she's still a very important part of the Colored Country chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. I think she could give the best answer, but I think, when the Wreaths Across America event began nationally, I believe it began at Arlington Cemetery, and I think it was, the timing was around the holiday season, right? To kind of have that show that warmth towards our veterans that served us and to make sure that they're not forgotten.
So it's this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Tahnequin Cemetery from
10 a.m. It's the ceremony's less than an hour.
Yeah.
And then we you can grab the wreaths and
lay them out and have it be a really fulfilling, I like what you said about that, about being
soul-filling
opportunity. I love that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I want to talk about the transition going from Mayor Randall to Jimmy, to Mayor Hughes, and then real quick about the opening of the new City Hall. Yeah. I want to get into that. KDXU News Time is 9:44. Coming back with David Cordero from the City of St. George. Don't mind if we do. KDXU News Time is 9:46. I'm Dale Desmond. My very first, I guess it would be second. I was planning on having you as being my first guest. But you had some a meeting, your Sunshiners meeting that I've been a member of for about a year.
Yeah.
Thanks to you.
Yeah.
Here with the Chamber of Commerce, we've got a David Cordero in studio with the City of St. George for a few more minutes here. Let's get into how this is going to work. For those of you that don't know how the transition works, and then also not only transitioning from Mayor Randall to Mayor Hughes, but what happens to that empty seat.
Yeah, for sure. And let me clarify, I'm the first out-of-building guest you've ever had.
Right? Ever. Yep. That's true.
First out-of-building.
Right. That's it. You were the first non-scramble guest.
That's right.
Andy Thompson was scrambled because he was filling in. Because you were taking care of some stuff, but I'm glad to do it. Yeah. I'm glad you're here, and let's get into this. How we transition, make this happen.
Yeah, so we're going to have a new mayor on Monday, January 5th, the first Monday of the year. Jimmy Hughes is going to be sworn in as a new mayor. Jimmy has served for 14 years on the city council, so I think he's well prepared for this, and so that he'll be sworn in on January 5th, and then at that point there's going to be an application period that people who want to fulfill the final 2 years of his council seat that he's relinquishing to become mayor. There's a period of time, I don't know exactly how long that is. We usually don't try to announce that until after he's sworn in, but there is an application period culminating with a public hearing where people can state their case to the city council, who will then vote on who will get to fill the remainder of mayor-elect Hughes's term.
And so the remaining, the sitting council and the mayor all vote, correct?
Yeah.
Is that five? Because there's five members plus the mayor.
Right, and there's...
Who gets to vote?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So for sure the city council does. I am not positive, but I think the mayor would only vote if there was a tie.
A tie break.
Right.
I see that. Because it would be 4-4, or 2-2, yeah.
I may be wrong, but I'm
okay,
as I recall...
It seems like it would... We'll check the bylaws. Yeah. We'll get into that.
It's been 5 years since we've done something like this.
Yeah.
That was back when Michelle Randall... was appointed as mayor when
John
Pike left with a year left on his term. So Michelle Randall became mayor, and she had 1 year left on her term. And at that point, there was application period. Vardell Curtis ended up being voted in by the council and filled the last year of Michelle Randall's council term.
Love that. And so, how long is left on Jimmy's term then?
There's 2 years.
2 years. Okay. So you have those 2 years. Okay. So that is on, I want to skip ahead. It is Monday, January 5th.
That's when Mayor-elect Hughes will be sworn in. And then at that point, an application period will
open.
Will open.
Okay. And then once that is open, we don't have to do a special election. It's all purely just by the council.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's correct.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. All right. And so that's going to be, we'll see how that goes, and we'll see if it how things progress from that point.
Right.
Do we I don't know, maybe this isn't worth talking about, but do we anticipate some of the folks that didn't win this last
first
election will be there?
Certainly possible. Yeah. I've got no inkling on who's going to put in, but I do know last time there was an opening, we had, I think, about 24 people had thrown their name into the ring. And so it typically garners a lot of interest.
And so how long are they able to, are they given 2 minutes? Is it 5 minutes? Is it like a filibuster thing? You can just stump as long as
well,
you want.
Well, it's not unlimited.
I'm curious. Maybe you don't know. It's just a random point of trivia.
Two or 3 minutes. I think it mimics kind of the open mic that we have the first meeting of each month. I think it's 2 or 3 minutes. And tell you what, when you're up there speaking, 2 or 3 minutes goes pretty fast.
Yeah.
When
you're trying to get on the city council.
Right. Yeah.
I anticipate, I didn't go last time when Michelle's spot was filled. But I am curious how many of the, because I know almost every one of the folks that ran for city council or even folks that have run for different positions in, mayoral race or whatever. Do you anticipate? I mean, do you think you'll see that?
It's certainly possible. Yeah. It's just kind of up to, anybody who meets the qualifications can run and we've seen a lot in the past where we have for a municipal election we may have if there's 3 seats available we may have 12 people running. If there's 2 seats we may have 6 or 7, but a lot of times for this spot, maybe because it doesn't involve an extended campaign.
Yeah,
We tend to get a lot of people that.
That's right. Maybe you don't have the budget to run a full on, signs and all the or the. Yeah, I'm curious to see how that goes. Now that I'm astute in my radio career and have gotten and moved ahead, so that'll be interesting. January 5th is that day. If you're wanting to run for city council and you want to look at getting appointed, then you can certainly do that. It's gonna be at the brand new, which will transition
we'll post the application period.
So you'll have a run up, but that it'll all happen at the chambers, the new city hall, which we just opened, is where we can transition to talk about that. We talked about it with Michelle Randall just a little bit last week, but I'm interested. Some of the cool things, we talked about this in the firehouse, some of the cool things, some of the cool features of the new city hall that you might know about.
Yeah, and so we are now all moved in to the new City Hall building. It took about a month to get all of our departments over. We kind of went department by department. We had to make sure that the furniture was installed. Everybody's, the network, computer network was there. It's not an easy undertaking when you're trying to move a whole city from one place to the other, but we're there. Our utilities was the last step in the puzzle, and so So we're all there. We're located at 61 South Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
The neat little factoid that maybe not a lot of people are aware of, but we chose the number 61
yep.
to coincide with 1861 when the LDS settlers came in and set up the encampment mall in December of 1861. Now the city, so a lot of people think the city was born in 1861.
Right.
That's not the case. It was actually January 17th, 1862. And so from that point, fast forward 164 years on the dot, and we are going to host the grand opening and Heritage Day celebration. We're combining the two to have one big community party right at our new City Hall building. It's going to be January 17th. We're going to have the ribbon cutting ceremony will begin at 11 a.m. And then the root beer floats will start at noon.
The root beer floats will flow.
The root beer floats. The root beer floats typically are at the social hall, but this year right. we're going to bring them down and make it part of a big celebration. And everyone's going to be invited.
Are we closing off Main Street?
We're closing off Main Street.
It's going to be a big street party.
Yep, and the weather's going to be great. I guarantee you.
Guaranteed your money back.
Yeah, that's right. And so we're really excited. The last part of the City Hall being built, so the inside is, 99.9% done. We're buttoning up a few things here and there. A little kind of touches, details, and I'll get to the cool stuff. I promise. I'll get there. But we have the plaza, which is the corner on 100 South that's being built right now.
Yeah.
So there'll be trees, a gathering area. There can be bands, things of that nature happening there. Just a great place just to hang out. So that's gonna be a great function of it. So when you go into the new City Hall, you want to park in our parking structure, which is directly to the east of the City Hall building.
Yep.
You access it through 100 South. That's the best way to access it, through 100 South. And you park there, and then you can walk into the new City building. You enter through the atrium, which is the big sweeping area that is just picturesque. Right now we've got a large Christmas tree there. That's a great photo spot if you wanted to take photos of that. On the wall, there's a mosaic mural that has little tiles that the community painted and brought it all together. And of course, the city council chambers can accommodate a lot more people than the old chambers. And oh my goodness, the light.
Yeah.
The light is unbelievable.
So nice.
Even when it's cloudy, you get a lot of light.
Yeah, I remember the city hall before. When was that built? The previous one where your office was at? Where was that? When was that? It seems like it's pretty old.
1980 was when it was built. And at the time, if you can believe it, what do you think the population of St. George was in
1980? 15,000.
Close, 11,000.
Okay.
11,000, and that housed the entire city, including the police department.
Yeah, the city offices, yeah.
Well, yeah, in fact, the St. George Art Museum was even located in that building. Like, we had everything in there. But the city's grown, as you can tell, and so that made the need for the new City Hall building to be built. And we're so excited, and we really built it with the public in mind. We want to make it easy for the public to access, for them to be a part of it, and we're just stoked.
I love it. I love it. I'm excited. What I'm excited for is all these new buildings around downtown that Peaks will go, okay, my city is investing in itself.
Exactly.
You don't have these old decrepit old buildings, but we bring in people from outside the community who work in our homes and in our businesses, and they go, gosh, the city is really with it. And you've probably seen that.
Yeah, exactly. And this new building, we have a building that's worthy of this great city now. I don't want to take anything away from the old building. It served us really well. A lot of great memories were made there. You talk about sturdy. It's funny, at the time when that site was located, the 200 East that went all the way up to Red Hills Parkway was non-existent.
Yeah. Yep.
And so this building was really huge and was a valuable part of it. Melissa Anderson used to be from CEC TV. She did a great video on reminiscing about the old building. Talked to a lot of the longtime current city employees and also longtime retired city employees. People like Kent Perkins, former city manager, Esplin, and you had a lot of people kind of weighing in and reminiscing about where it all came from.
Yep. I love it. So many cool things on the website. All this stuff is all posted on the website.
That's right, sgcityutah.gov.
All right, David. About one more minute here. Your LA Chargers playing tonight. I know you're hoping for a big win. I'm a big Bills fan, Buffalo Bills fan, and I need the Chargers to lose to help our playoff seeding here. So we took care of business in the snow yesterday. Did you see that game? That was you were texting.
I was texting. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's just standard December football in Buffalo, and that's what makes me love Southern Utah. My brothers were at the game, and they were texting me before saying, "Dude, we miss you, man. We miss you." And I said, "I do not in any circumstance." Miss being part of
Western New York
snow football. I went out there last year for the Bills Broncos playoff game, and it was cold. It wasn't snowing though. He's David Cordero from the city of St. George. David, hey man, love to have you back every time.
You bet.
My first guest, my good buddy.
All right.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Dale.
All right, KDXU News time is 9:59. Taking things to Fox News. KDXU News time is 9:59.